Debbie, can you talk a little bit about how that effort got started and maybe a little more about your role in there?
Sure. Thanks, Jared, for the interest and having this conversation. We don't have a detox in the Garfield County portion of the valley and haven't for a good dozen years. There's some detox now up in Pitkin County that's happened in the last couple years, so that's really awesome. But the need is definitely there. And really how this all began was the city of Glenwood Springs approached me to help look at the issue of homelessness, which we know has been a growing issue around the country and certainly just more and more visible in our valley. And it didn't take but a first interview. Not that I was surprised, not that I didn't know, but I began with the emergency services. And the first thing that I heard from both the fire and the police were, you know, we have really substance abuse and mental health problem and issues. And yeah, it is definitely connected and correlated with homelessness, and it's all kind of lumped together. Not every person who's homeless has mental health or substance abuse issues, right? And not everybody who has substance abuse issues or mental health is homeless. But there is a large piece where all of that overlaps. And certainly in a more chronic and more pronounced way, because not having a home and being displaced in that manner, it just exacerbates all of those other issues. So that's where as soon as you turn around with that, it was like, well, we don't even have the first place to start as far as a detox. And particularly then, because my next interview was at the hospital emergency room, that's where police and or fire bring people, unless there's a crime committed and they end up at the jail. So we're using all of our emergency, very expensive services in a way that's that they're not really built for. And I began to see right away that we were using, you know, emergency response for chronic issues. And those tools just don't work. And then so what happens is we just keep doing the same thing over and over again. So that's kind of where the beginning was.
All right. Where are you guys at in the process of creating this more useful way of using our services?
Right, right. Or a more appropriate for what the issue is, mm-hmm. right? Is sort of like you have to have the right tools for the right issue if you're going to really address it. What I've said to people and been a part of is that we really, when you think about all these parts, it's systems change, right? So we began to get together those who were stakeholders in some way, and create what we're calling a recovery continuum task force. Now, that's really critical, number one, because that is that, you know, it brings together this collaboration of people. Number two, we're looking at the whole recovery continuum. Now, it's not just about detox as in a facility, a one place where you drop somebody off when they're under the influence of alcohol or other drugs, right? And then you leave and go back to your work, because that's not really the way that we end up solving the problem, right? What we need is for people to live in recovery. That's when we get to the end point, and that's when you don't see the chronic things over and over again, and that's when we're truly helping each other. So we're calling it recovery continuum and looking at that all along the way, and certainly detox and or a detox facility, you know, a dedicated place is one step in that continuum. Now, that task force has grown. It keeps growing. We have people from all over the county involved. And we have just been going at this for 3 months. And this was something that people said, no, we tried it before. We've been trying it for years. Nobody can do it. We can't do it. And it's very exciting to see the enthusiasm and how far we've come.
Who are some of those key stakeholders? You mentioned the EMS before. Who else is coming to the table?
The hospitals, and now both hospitals in Garfield County, Valley View Hospital and Grand River Hospital. The police departments, law enforcement, all the way out into the sheriffs and state patrol even. The people who are in the recovery community, people who are doing services also, people who are the faith community, we're starting to really tap into that group, cities, towns, governments. So it's really been an interested citizens even. Mixed in with that are absolutely people whose first focus was kind of the homeless population and see that this is really an important place to that overlaps with that.
Mm-hmm. What's been some of like the more interesting insights that have come out of these discussions, this organizing that you've done?
I think the aha of we can do this, the aha of, oh, it's a whole continuum that we're not just focused on detox. You know, we started this with detox because people understood, right? That was a word we could all get our brains around and get together about. And yeah, we need a detox. We need a detox. But very quickly that morphed into kind of a guided conversation about if you just have somebody, if you just dump somebody off, even though you're that first responder, if we don't really keep moving them along this continuum, you can be picking them up again, right? And back you are again. So the whole idea of everybody beginning to see that they have a critical and important place along the continuum, even if they're just at the very beginning of it, that what they do in their piece really matters. And that, so if you're a first responder, you have a critical part in engaging somebody in a way that's going to lead to, you know, the further piece down the continuum. Now, first, we got to get people sober, right? So there's that. You're dealing with somebody in that kind of state. But the idea also that, wait, it's not a failure if we see somebody twice or two times or three times. It's part of the recovery process. But if we understand that, it's very different. And I think the other one is that we're all in it together.
Yeah.
That we can all do this together.
Yeah. I think what happens a lot is we get burned out because we see the same people over again as, you know, as helpers. And the more we keep doing that and feeling that like we're doing it on our own, that's not sustainable. You can start to resent that person that keeps showing up at your door.
Compassion fatigue, as the EMS responders said, you know, and the police even, you know, really, we want to help people and this doesn't feel like helping. And so we get into a very kind of, if you would, combative space. And then you have different opinions and different ideas of people in a community. And so we weren't communicating with each other. And I think at the end, what, you know, one of the big things I'm seeing too is everybody really at the end wants the same thing. It's just, how do you get there? And you get frustrated when you try and your tools don't work for you. So it's a morale thing, right?
Yeah.
And keep our good people in good places.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be doing the right thing.
You said it's been like a dozen years since there's been something like this in the lower Roaring Fork Valley. I mean, what do you think has been the roadblock that, you know, keeps getting in the way?
One part of that is that emergency rooms, you have to take people. If you would, and they're open 24/7, they always have somebody staffed. So there was some place to bring people to. And even though that was not necessarily the right place, that's what we've been using.
Sure.
And the other part about it was when people got together, as they all said too, as soon as they got to money, which was almost the first thing they would start with, it all fell apart because everybody was like, how are we going to pay for this? This is not an inexpensive venture. And it's going to take a lot of commitment from a lot of places. So when we did the first meeting, because I had heard all this, right? I mean, I went out and talked to people individually first. When we had our first meeting, one of the ground rules was we will not talk about money. And the second meeting was we will not talk about money. If you talk about money, you're out of order and you'll be called on it. Because we really needed to, as I said, we need to know what we need to do and why. Because there's no reason to talk about money if we aren't clear about that. And it is the coming together as a community and the clarity of that that starts attracting money. That's when you can then say, okay, now we all agree on this. What do we need? And foundations and other sort of support will show up when you know that you're all clear as a community. We're all going in
sure.
this direction.
Yeah, you had to have that clarity of mission, mm-hmm. right, before you can support anything.
Took us a little while, didn't it? Not long, but we had to have the conversation, I think, mm-hmm. together.
And so that mission is really that continuum of care, that it isn't just this, it's not just a holding right. cell for the
right.
person.
We even have talked about, and we'll stay very true to, the idea that detox can be a continuum. There's not just one way to detox, and it isn't just coming to this facility. Right. So there's other ways to do that. So that's part of what we'll continue to focus on and know. And I think that's important because we don't just put all our eggs in one basket, if you would. And we really recognize what's possible. I think creating realistic expectations for each place along that continuum and for detox facility, mm-hmm. even, you know, and understanding that this is pretty much all voluntary stuff. people do need that opportunity, right? An opportunity with some strong encouragement, and that's what will allow us we have that. But again, we're still working with people, and we aren't in control of all of that. So when you are working together, though, as a community, and you can all just sort of together, it's a lot of different. It's way different. And, you know, sometimes when we don't do that, we've it's unintended consequences. What I do sabotages what you're trying to do, and vice versa. And not what we intended, but that's what happens a lot. So our efforts really feel like they're not useful.
Yeah. So at the Community Opioid Treatment Strategy, really our focus is Glenwood to Aspen. What is the climate like, you know, farther west in Garfield County? What are the conversations that are happening down there?
Right. You know, we started right in Glenwood Springs and with the big hospital there, right, and the county involved, and just kind of got some core people together. And now we've really been reaching out into the west side of the county. And what I'm hearing from the law enforcement, number one, is, oh my gosh, yes, please.
Okay.
We'll drive, right? We need help. And so now we're beginning to have those conversations with more people, you know, certainly service people, but towns, and definitely the county's been involved already. So there's absolutely the need. And in the geographic area that we have, right, there's always just got to do the best you can do to find what's a location that can at least be the most reachable for the most people. And that's, I think, what we're kind of settling on is Glenwood Springs. But that's why this whole, the idea of detox, right? We've even talked about, you know, mobile response and various kinds of things. And not everybody has to come to this one place in this one town.
Yeah. And so there is there's a detox in Pitkin and one in Junction.
Grand Junction, yeah.
And then there's, is it Eagle? No.
Yeah.
But there is a detox in Eagle. I still get confused.
Frisco. I know. It's really, communities really, it's not that communities don't have this need, right? And that's why this really is a big lift. This is not just a small undertaking. And I think that that's the other part with this task force, is kind of going into this with eyes open. So we didn't just start off at day one and go, yeah, we want to detox. Let's find a place. Let's run it. You know, we really spent time saying, do we need this? And why do we need this? And what would it be like if we don't have it, you know, even if we did other things? But I think the conversation, right, of even talking about that has gotten us into the conversation about other ways we can operate. We've talked about better triage at the front end, you know, and those responders are all ears about that. And we've talked about the other kind of piece about that is a community piece, even at a detox, that we're able to bring together community resources. And those might not just be drug and alcohol treatment or everything, but it might be about food and housing, and it might be about medical care, and it might be about job or whatever those are. And couldn't we have a staffing, if you would, a discharge staffing with those resources around the table and ready to help this person, you know, step out the door and really have their feet on the ground? And that's really what we find was needed, I think, a lot, was that peer support, just what we call case management in the business, right? But just somebody helping you through the steps, because it's confusing for sure. When we talk about homelessness, one of the things that we know and why this gets important is that it's very hard for somebody to get their feet on the ground if they don't have a roof over their head. And the national understanding, after much research and all and many years of experience, is kind of leans to this housing first model, which is that, in fact, someone doesn't have to have everything together, have a job, be clean and sober and all the parts and pieces before then they get housing, because it's really hard to have those parts or keep that all together if you don't have housing.
Mm-hmm.
So we have some effort, a really concerted effort in the Valley around the homeless question and issue at the same time. I think it's just a huge, it makes a big world of difference about the success of both of those efforts, because we have them both going at the same time.
Have people started to put together numbers as far as how many homeless, chronically homeless people we have in either the counties or the municipalities? Like, do we have that information?
Well, the standard way that homelessness has been counted is what's called a point in time count, which is like on this day, and it's a winter day now in January, I believe it is, on this day, how many people do you know of that were in your shelter, you know, on a couch? I mean, those kinds of things, right? And we come together under this continuum of care, as it's called in our area, and everybody puts in their numbers and says, well, this is the best idea that we can have about that. And we know that that's far from perfect, for sure. And that doesn't really even, it doesn't really tell us that some of the issues that we're dealing with, right, in the chronic sorts of things, because somebody could be homeless for 2 weeks, just didn't make rent payment because they lost their job or whatever. There's all kinds of issues. And in rural areas, we're learning is it's just even more difficult in a way. Some research says that in rural areas, we're better off looking at homelessness among children in school, which we can identify in a little mm-hmm. bit more way. But again,
and use that as the baseline?
That's what some of the research is saying, is that in rural areas, we should be looking at that's more telling. Now, what we're doing here for homelessness is that we as a valley, and we're talking Aspen to Parachute, so we're talking, you know, through Pitkin, Eagle, and Garfield County, have adopted a national model that's called Built for Zero and been trained in that, have a coach in that. We were able to get a grant to get to the training and really look at that as the methodology at which we would begin to work a really focused homeless effort. And in that, you create what's called a by-name list, and that's how you get your homeless count. I mean, you literally are saying, here's so-and-so, right? and there's a survey that goes with that, that you begin to see what the issues are, and you begin to kind of then talk about and come together around those issues with all the different organizations and places that can be. So,
And that list is shared throughout the county, throughout the different counties.
Obviously, that's part of our whole big first effort is that you have the release of information and all the kinds of things that make that possible. Because, there are no fences, right? People move from here to there. They're in between different organizations. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody has a little bit of information. Nobody has it all is kind of what we do oftentimes. We know that on that list is also going to include, one of the biggest barriers here is substance use. And there we go, right? Mm-hmm. So where are we going to turn around with that? So when we have someone at detox, let's say the police know that, I've got this person, I brought him to detox again. I know that they're homeless. Detox knows that. Maybe community staffing happens out of there. But part of in that staffing, right, is someone who's really focused on homelessness and on placing people in a home. So we're not talking about homelessness as in our answer being a shelter. We're talking about permanent housing for people. And the Built for Zero model starts with that zero homelessness is possible. And it's been proven, it's been shown, it's working around the country in various places. So it's kind of like the detox thing, right? We have to start with some belief of yes, we can.
That it's possible.
Yeah.
That it's a heavy lift.
Yeah.
And we have the resources in this community to take on that lift.
Well, and when we talk about those numbers, they are not huge. Even a couple years ago, maybe that point in time count was like 200. Last year, it was less than that, 125. And I'm just talking off the top of my head here, right? I'm not getting exact numbers. And again, we know that those aren't really the exact numbers. We know that in the summertime, for example, we've got a lot of transients. That's a whole different story, too. So,
I mean, that is an interesting question. And a lot of people talk about, we're on the I-70 corridor and that creates some challenges. I used to counsel at Mind Springs and I had a lot of clients that were homeless up in Aspen, actually. And I would ask, I'd have that conversation like, why are you here? And the number one answer was, oh, it's a beautiful place. And then invariably the second one or the third one would be it's safer here. Mm-hmm. I have to contend with bears in the summer. But the bear is easy to predict. Mm-hmm. Their behavior is easy to predict versus being on whatever street in Denver.
Right, in a city.
And so there is that sense of safety here.
So some of the same reasons that any of us live here, right?
Exactly
the same reasons that any of us live here. Yeah. I mean, it's a challenge for all of us to live in the valley. And that's part of the homeless piece too, is that it's been shown that when you have communities, the more housing challenges that you have, the more challenging that is, of course, to the homelessness and the more homelessness or challenge to get people housed, right? I've run into so many people, too, who aren't, it's not necessarily about, I want everything free. I think people have a misunderstanding of that. It's just sort of attainable, affordable, just to be able to make it. And I think there's a place where, especially some of the folks who are homeless, living in the tents, living in their cars or whatever, have just reached that place that it's just like, wow, it's hopeless. It's like impossible, even though they have some income coming in, maybe from disability or maybe they have a job even, right? But it's just out of reach. We know that the survey that's being done in many of our clinics, which I think the number now of responses is like upwards of 4,000, is asking about some of those challenges. And the number one is food, interestingly enough.
Yeah.
Number two is housing, and number three is transportation. Now, what we've learned about food, and again, you know, here we are right along with all of the research and national stats, is that people will first spend their money on housing or medical care, which is, you know, ends up being an issue, and then have very little left for food. So the food gap is an interesting piece now, especially I think among our seniors who are pretty much, you know, where they're at is where they're going to be as far as their income. So in ways, we are creating some of our own homelessness. You know, all the people who are homeless there didn't just come here from someplace else. Many of them became homeless here, right? Because they, in fact, got injured. The injury led to a loss of a job or led to an overburden of medical expenses and, you know, down the spiral goes.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly one of the ways that you address that hopelessness and helplessness is by self-medicating with drugs,
sure.
Right, and alcohol.
You know, I think the really interesting thing is that there are these big lifts, as you say, in that we are finally coming together. You know, you said you've been at this for 37 years.
Well, and, you know, working in the community, I mean, yeah, right? So, you know, for on different projects,
exactly.
Certainly not this one. I mean,
But I've seen it for, you know, I've been here working in the community 6 years and seeing these things come up and seeing the energy behind it is hopeful.
Good.
You know?
Because it's system stuff, isn't it?
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
it's not a short term, real quick, you know, we want some quick wins, of course, but we want those wins to be along the path of long-term change. Now, there will always be homeless folks. There will always be people who are in addiction, right? Just as when I was working in the youth service world, we're always going to have kids who are delinquents and committing crimes or whatever. The key is, does a community have a way to respond? An effective way to respond, a way that we're all aligned on and responding together, that's the key.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to create here, because we have not had that with these couple issues, at least in the last many dozens of years.
Mm-hmm. And that, yeah, that systems point is so important, because when you don't have that system on how to respond, that's when the individual gets burned out. That's when the first responders, whoever they may be, you know, whether they're the librarians that are working with the homeless or the counselor in the office, it seems so daunting if there isn't a system behind you to support you.
And imagine what it seems like to that person.
Absolutely.
And the confusion
of,
and the, right? And I mean, just like, where do I go? Okay, somebody says they're going to help me, but that wasn't really what I needed. And so that's what the whole, even the Built for Zero piece is, right? And even when you have a detox, you're looking at one person at a time. So creating, part of the creating the system is to create a system that looks at one person at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And we've learned, right, in our helping profession about that client-focused work, right, client-centered work. But then we kind of forget. We just come up with programs and we come up with general ways to do stuff. We come up with things that work for us. That's not what it's about. What does this one person need? And here's our menu of what we can pick from, right? And so, and oops, we have a huge gap here. We need to fill in. We need another entree on our menu here, which is, I think, kind of what we realize with detox, right? It's like we have a really big missing piece or tool that we need. And that's what's so important then for us now, as we sort of get an understanding together, right, is to begin to communicate that to the communities and to people. Because everybody has a concern and an opinion about these really, you know, emotional as well as very visible issues. And so we as a community have to sort of march together and not not get in the way of each other's work. So that's going to be one of our efforts now, Jared is right, is to let everybody else in on this or know or where we're going and how, and how people can help. So that's a big one. And it's hard to get really clear about how to be really clear about that.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any way for people to get information on this effort or a next step that they can be involved in?
Well, I think that one of the things that people can do, I've been trying to kind of keep people who are really interested kind of in the loop, if you would, and create some communication. I think we'll start doing that in a more public way, right? But people can email me at Deborah L. Wilde, D-E-B-R-A-L, middle initial Wilde, W-I-L-D-E, and then just the zip code 81601, right? So that's easy to remember. That's the Glenwood zip code. So Deborah L. Wilde, 81601, at gmail.com. And then that is one way that I can just keep people informed, because I've done I've got one piece that put together, you know, kind of a white paper of sort of the exploration of these issues at the community level for the last several months. So what I've found is that just right initially being informed and understanding there's a whole lot more to know than what we might think we know. That's what I've certainly learned a lot in the last many months. That would be a beginning step right now.
Okay.